Blog Talk Radio.
So y'all was in Iraq together?
Yeah, we was in Iraq.
What did you do?
We was looking for weapons of mass destruction.
Did you ever find them?
You know goddamn well we ain't find them. What are you, some kind of political humorist? You Gary Trudeau up in this bitch?
I was looking for bitches, but they had that carpet shit all over them, and I couldn't see what they looked like. All that was really exposed was the eyes, and that wasn't enough for me, because, you know, I'm looking at the eyes can be pretty, and I take that carpet off, and then I got a tragedy.
Well, no, we ain't fine. But I always say the absence of evidence is not the evidence of absence.
What?
Simply because you don't have evidence that something does exist does not mean that you have evidence that something doesn't exist.
What?
What country are you from?
What?
What ain't no country I ever heard of? They speak English in what?
What?
English, motherfucker! Do you speak it?
Yeah.
So you understand the words I'm saying to you?
Yeah.
Well, what I'm saying is that there are known knowns and that there are known unknowns, but there's also unknown unknowns. Things we don't know that we don't know.
What?
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you. I double dare you, motherfucker. Say what one more time?
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
You know, folks, sometimes I forget that the great thespian actress Regina King does both voices on that Boondocks clip that we just played, Huey and Huey and the other kid, that she does both voices. And at first, when I first heard that she was going to do it, I was a little uncomfortable about that. Riley, Huey and Riley. I was a little uncomfortable about her doing that, but you actually get the distinction. You get the two different personalities, so I have to give her kudos. And actually, we had an opportunity to interview her, and I was lazy about it. So I'm going to have to contact Ms. Regina King. Perhaps we can get her for the comic shop to discuss the upcoming season four of the Boondocks. Folks, if you haven't guessed, this is Afro Nerd. Of the comic shop, our duality weekend, double matinee, double take, Afro Nerd at 6 p.m. I'm sorry, I'm making mistakes. The comic shop at 6 p.m. and Afro Nerd Radio at 7 p.m. Let's get into a little bit of nerdcore, a skosh of nerdcore music. And when we get back, we have a whole lot of crap, pulp crap to discuss. This is Adam Warrock, Nope, 2012. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove.
Hey, yo, if you need somebody to believe in this election season, then I got the woman for you right here. What up, Indiana?
Who can you believe in? The politicians in evening news speak of blues, so this party I'm leaving. Economy's the pit, GOP's beefing. Man, we lost the hope that Obama's been preaching. So I turn to local office and I look for a spark. And I'm nostalgic for the days I used to play in the park. That's when I thought, I need somebody committed to make a difference. No matter how big or small the issue or the position. City councilmen, state reps, and senators, together we can do it. 2012 and you knew it. Pawnee, it used to be the pits, man. Until she went kaboom and fixed it. Took a stand. So I'll take it on the road and I'm holding the line. And you can see it on my lawn. Door to door, so you sign. The petition to bring a change to your front porch. It's a new year and know that I'll be voting for no. It's like, yes, we can, even though we say no. 2012, that's the plan. Got me ready to go. Cause if we can't believe in people, then why bother to start? And I believe unless we know from the bottom up.
waited since the age of 10, and she's been holding down the Parks and Rec division since then. Yeah, we'll take a stand if you're with us. A new campaign to make us sit up, it's just one that gets us. Maybe a little messy and willing to take a chance. Let's be known 2012, like to say they can make. It's like, yes, we can, even though we say no. 2012, that's the plan, got me ready to go. Cause if we can't believe in people, then why bother to start? And I believe in let's be known from the bottom of my heart. Yes, we can, even though we say no. 2012, that's the plan, got me ready to go. Cause if we can't believe in people, then why bother to start? And I believe in let's be known from the bottom of my heart.
All right. Again, I had to let that ride, actually. That was Adam Warrock, Nope, 2012. And, of course, this is the Comic Shop, as presented by Avner Radio. You know, my partner in White Collar Crime, I have two partners, actually. One is waiting in abeyance, but Captain Kirk, that is.
Space, the final frontier. These are the...
is not available. He'll be in for the second half of this duality weekend. He'll be in for Avner Radio when we actually interview filmmaker actress Sandra Fond du Fay, who's coming on to discuss her film Yay Fond, a Kickstarter campaign film. You have to listen to that interview again. That's coming up at 7 o'clock. But I have my other partner in pulp related crime. We have the great Daryl B.
Rather Steelers freaking 2010. Goddamn. I'm here, though. I'm good.
Okay. All right, folks. Feel free to come in, respond, comment, question, whatever. The water is warm. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Folks, we're going to discuss all things pop, pulp, comic books, and even video game related. Actually, before the broadcast, minutes before the broadcast, I found out something pretty interesting. A new Twitter star. Now we are finding stars. Daryl, you probably know about this. We're actually finding and creating stars off of Twitter. Before, it used to be YouTube or, you know, maybe someone's specific website. Now I'm starting to slowly see people can become notables from their Twitter accounts. So there's a Twitter account that's of a nerd nature that's gaining some ground that I want to talk about in a few moments. But we're going to be all over the map, folks, this evening. We're just going to talk about a whole bunch of crap. So just hold on to your horses. Daryl, tell us a little bit about this latest we just spoke about it. Why is my memory failing? The movie that came out this weekend, Daryl.
Resident Evil Retribution. Yeah.
Yes. What is it, the fifth installment? Which one is this?
I'd say it's fifth. Yeah, fifth. Extinction. I'd say it's number five if I have my math straight. And the biggest complaint that hardcore gamers had about the franchise was how badly it strayed from the franchise. Well, in this one, and not to give too much away if you decide to go and see it, by whatever method, whether it be 3D, whether it be through other means, quote-unquote, you know, they tried to do a comic-slash-Dallas type thing involving the prior five movies. Again, I'm not trying to reveal too much away, but the Gambit will either re-hook you into the franchise, or you'll be laughing at, really, you guys are going to do all of this? But I will tell you this, folks. This thing is worth it just for the Michelle Rodriguez, Mila Jovovich fight scene. This thing is worth it just for that. I'll say that right there. We were talking about the female Expendables the other day. If they're going to do it, this guy's got to direct it because the fight scene was real, real good. It rivals the Ali Larder Miller fight scene from the previous installment with just action. All right? I will say it like that. But the sci-fi part of me looked at this movie, and there, if you've noticed on the commercials, there's obvious nods to Kill Bill. There's obvious nods to Night of the Living Dead. That's a given. There's even an obvious nod to The Magnificent Seven. If you watch the movie, you'll see it. And the guys do an okay job. It's just the concept is way out there. And I guarantee some people who are trying to think and analyze it, because honestly, he's trying to tie it right back into the video games again. And I have to say it didn't work. But, hey, I didn't feel like I wasted my $9 going to see this. You know, I went, I got a big thing of popcorn, I knew what I was going to do, I put my brain to the side, and then I was forced to think, and you know, that really didn't work. But if you want, if you just want to see zombies getting slaughtered, if you want to see corporations acting badly, if you want to see hot-looking chicks firing guns and fighting, you're not going to be disappointed.
What was the last one? I actually saw that on cable recently.
Extinction?
Yeah, that one wasn't that bad. You know, but then again, I mean, isn't it kind of a rotating joke that it's a kind of definitely in the B movie genre kind of thing. It's not really a high. You wouldn't say it's high art. That, you know, in comparing it to, let's say, Blade Runner, it's not of that type of thought provoking thing.
But I will say this. These guys know, hey, we're not doing this to win no Academy Awards. We're doing this to have fun. And it's obvious these folks have a lot of fun on the set and the chemistry. And almost all the major players from the five previous movies are back in this one. All the major players. And if you see the previous ones and you see some of the ways they died and you're wondering how it could be back in this one, I can't reveal that. It's tied into the earlier point, but you're just going to have to watch. Because, again, it's either a twist that brings you in or it's a twist that says, oh, come on, you mean I wasted all of that money? That's the type of twist that they do here.
Well, we have a call. I'm going to open up the lines in a moment, but I will admit to something that well, first of all, I'm going to probably revisit all of the prior Resident Evils because I've seen them here and there. So I need to really get into it. Is there like a five? Well, it wouldn't be five, but is it like a three or four disc set of Resident Evil? Is that I would think they would have done that by now.
Yeah, I think there's a collected four. I know there's at least three of them that's collected. The first three are collected. I know that. I there were plans for like an umbrella-type suitcase or case with the umbrella symbol carrying the first four ones. I don't know if that got released. Similar to the Marvel carrying case thing that got nixed. And now I hear they're going to do a helicarrier for the Avengers movies, you know, which that'd be kind of cool to open up a helicarrier and that there's the set, you know, that'd be geeking out. I just don't know what in Resident Evil you could have open up and, there's your disc right there for it, you know, because there isn't too many carrying cases shown in Resident Evil since the first one.
What I was getting into was, you know, I have a slight tolerance to real gore. You know, I go up and down with it. Sometimes some stuff can be so gory I just can't. You know, some people, as you know, some fans are immersed themselves in gore. There's no limit to their gore tolerance. But there was this I think on comicbookmovie.com, they had this contest where you could actually win a severed hand.
Oh, that's nice.
Hear me out. A severed hand wrapped in like how you would buy meat. Yeah, and the hand looked authentic, and it would have had Mila Jovovich, her signature, her autograph would have been on this thing. And I looked at I was deciding, do I really want this thing? You know, it looked a little too real, Darryl. Honestly, it looked a little too real.
Yeah,
the cool factor was almost overriding my gross out factor. So I'm wondering, you talked about what potentially could be offered as product. I'm wondering if they're going to offer like severed hands as some kind of collector's item. It was pretty gross.
Well, I'll have to say this. Compared to other zombie movies and everything, you know, Resident Evil's like bloodless. You know, that. You know, yes, there's blood. Okay, yes. But compared to some of the other horror movies that we've seen, this is bloodless in relation. You know, I mean, hey, the Romero movies, the Italian zombie movies, those have lots of blood, lots of gore. But when you look at the Resident Evil series, since they're trying to mass market it to, you know, the mainstream, they have kept the blood and gore to a minimum and focused instead on action scenes, just scare-out moments, and hey, just either moments that really have you go, well, that's real fun, or, oh, that just sucked, you know? And
all right, let's open up.
They're non-apologetic about it.
Let's open up the lines. Let's get into the lines. I don't want this person holding up forever. All right, caller, welcome to the comic shop. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from. 703. What's up?
Hello?
Hello? Yes.
Hey, it's me, Black Ronin.
Hey, Black Ronin, what's up, man?
Actually, I was just listening, actually. For some reason, I'm not getting no sound through my computer, so I decided to call in, so.
All right. Well, you have the option. You're a friend of the show. Do you want to sit in, or do you want to just lay back?
I can sit in.
All right. Did you happen to see this latest Resident Evil iteration?
Now, I started watching Resident Evil after two. So I haven't seen one in the theater since two. Yeah.
You're like me. There's something about it. I mean, I go in and out of this thing. I just happened to see the fourth one, and it was somewhat interesting. But I don't want to come off like I'm an elitist, but, you know, I probably am. But some things that are like, you know, I'm weird when it comes to movies. If it's really like a real schlocky, kitschy, over-the-top, B-rated movie, I might actually like it. But if it's a B-rated movie that tries to take itself seriously, then I get turned off. And if it's a highbrow sci-fi thing, I'm there. So either it's got to be – you have to really be so out-of-pocket, crazy, lowbrow, almost like a Trauma kind of thing. And I think Trauma's making a comeback. You know, it's got to be a Toxic Avenger kind of thing, or it has to be – Hold your nose in the air and make Arthur C. Clarke references. I love that. But if it's in the middle where I think, you're trying to make us think this is serious, but it's really, really hackneyed, tropey, schlock, that's what's turning me off. The only thing that's pulling me into this thing is that the video game element of it. When they come up with these characters, like I love Marvel versus Capcom, and they put in these Resident Evil characters in there, then I'm like, then it pulls me in. So I have to look at this stuff, I guess, just to shore up my knowledge base. But it's not – Resident Evil just doesn't mesh with me that well. And I don't know what it is.
I'm like a big martial arts fan. Actually, what's the lead actress's name again? This escaped me just now.
Mila Jovovich.
She's actually a trained martial artist. So, I mean – and some of them I've seen her hand, like I've seen Ultraviolet or whatever it is. And actually, you know, it's kind of a B-movie, but her fight scenes are really well choreographed and everything. But there's something about Resident Evil where there's something missing there. I can't, you know, I think you're right, D-Bird. I mean, I think it's just, you know, it fits somewhere in the middle where it's just not enough to get me to pay money to go see it. But like I watch it like on cable or maybe rent it on DVD 6 months later, you know, something like that, you know.
Well, you know something, Darryl. What is that movie that came out? Is the movie that probably got Christian Bale the gig for Batman? We know, of course, it was American Psycho was one thing, but there was the other film he did dealing with Gunpowder.
Yeah. Me and my buddy were talking about that at work. My coworker was talking about that at work. We couldn't remember the name of that movie either. What was it? Anybody know?
Hey, Dix was his nemesis in that.
Yep. Yeah.
Equilibrium.
Right.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Equilibrium, for whatever reason, holds up. You could think it could fit in that same kind of in the middle thing, but you know it's dystopic. It's got the gun kata thing. It's something about, and plus the fact that I know
it's cool.
It's just cool. Resident Evil.
Yeah.
I love women. Heck, even the stuff that Tarantino has done with women, even the stuff that Robert Rodriguez has done with women.
Like Kill Bill.
I guess the approach to it comes off more like high art. It's more of an homage to B movies. This is a B movie that is, you know, it's a cash grab because now we're on the fifth iteration of this thing.
Well, I will just say this, okay? Anything Tarantino's done, Rodriguez has done outside of Spy Kids, you know, their stuff is bloodier than Resident Evil. So it's not the blood that's getting to you, all right? I come from the point where, you know, with this, I didn't go in expecting no high thing, all right? But the reason the franchise hooked me in is I'm seeing some kick-ass fighting scenes. All right, and here it is. They don't use the highest budgets in the world here. All right, their budget is lower than The Walking Dead.
Really?
They do not use a high budget here. They reuse. They're doing it off of the old Stargate / that whole movie house, and it's the same movie house with Equilibrium. Same movie house with Ultraviolet. You know, if they spend $20 million making a movie, then they've gone over budget. They spend little money on it, all right? Most of the actors get upfront salary, but they're paid from the DVD sales and the merchandising. You know, they have the Seinfeld-type deal. And that's why these actors always want to come back and do more. Because hey, you know what? We're going to be noticed. Hey, because every week you watch, there's a Resident Evil movie on cable sometimes. So they're getting paid every time it gets reshowed. They love it.
Well, one quick thing I want to do a transition.
I think it's
media's
problem too.
We have a lot more show to go through. But I do want to mention I just think about some of the movies that I dig that are so not like that. And Darryl probably knows. Listen, I'm a big Ghost Dog fan. Going back 12 or 13 years. With Forrest Whitaker and Jim Jarmusch, yet RZA was in that. Matter of fact, RZA's upcoming Iron Fist intrigues me more than Resident Evil. So I mean, you know, I don't know. So it's just something about Resident Evil. Although I probably will be happy to buy the DVD. It's something about going to the theater to get it, to look at it. It's going to block me, you know. But picking up the disc will probably turn me on. But going to the theater and sitting down as if to look at it like I would definitely for a Jim Jarmusch film or the upcoming RZA film, I don't know. I have something's preventing me from doing that. All right.
Well, don't worry. You got Dread 3D coming out on this Friday here, and England has it as its highest rated movie ever. And honestly, I could care less about Judge Dread.
Well, that's nothing. I gotta. I hold a grudge for Drudge or for Dread, but you know from the Stallone vehicle, I mean I don't know. I still have a nasty taste in my mouth about that. I might have to buy
that on
DVD too.
That was pretty bad.
I'm hearing it. It is demonstrably better. In all fairness,
it looks better
than the one that came out. But it's just the uniform's the same. I know it's more to the comic book, but. I'm going to buy that on DVD. I don't see myself looking at being in theater for that one. I don't know.
I might try to see it. I might try to go see it. It's intriguing enough to me. I might actually try to check it out.
Quick turnaround. I want to talk about this new zero books that DC's coming out with. You know, we're coming in after the DC New, DC 52. Now I guess this is like a soft reboot, going back to like the origins and all these zero books. Specifically, this is actually going to be somewhat of a versus segment. I picked up Batman and Robin Zero, and it goes into this incarnation of Robin, Damian Wayne's, actually Batman's actual son this time. It's going into his origins. Now, Daryl, correct me if I'm wrong, but is this the first time that we've actually seen his origin illustrated? I always thought that maybe I skipped the book or something. I always thought that literally his mother, Talia, kind of just dropped him off. And it was explained. I don't remember actually seeing him being trained by his mother this way in such detail.
Batman and Son. The book Batman and Son before the reboot had, yes, she dropped him off, but yes, you saw snippets in that of him being trained by Talia, them talking about how if he failed, that they were going to harvest his organs for Ra's al Ghul and all of that. You got his origin through that. I mean, this was just a rehash to me. You know, I'm sorry. Most of these zero books had no appeal to me. The two that actually did resonate with me was the Dal H for Hero, Dal H, you know, which brought up a very interesting twist to the use of the powers of the dial and the characters coming out of it, and the Earth 2-0, which kind of sort of gives you more of the history behind there and how Mr. Terrific in that universe, not the black one, the white guy, how he's their worst enemy and his methodology behind it. Both of those added something new to the mythos. The other ones I read, it clashed with what I already knew.
Daryl, quickly for the audience, because we're trying to, you know, we can go into insider speak a bit too much sometimes. Explain some of what of the Dial H. I know this is maybe what the second or third edition of Dial H. Explain Dial H to the audience.
Yeah, please.
All right.
Dial
H for Heroes essentially a dial that if you press the circles on it in a pattern with H E R O, you become a different hero for an hour at a time. Okay? It's what McDuffie based Ben 10 on. Where you turn the dial and you hit and all of a sudden you become that alien. Well, McDuffie created that after he was told that Dial H for Hero would never work as a TV series, as a cartoon. Alright? So they have famed author China Melville, all right, redoing it for the zero line, or excuse me, the 52 line, okay? And it's darkly funny, it's scary. They have this fat kid or fat gentleman who, in a phone booth, hit the dials on the phone booth, and it was actually the hero dial in the phone booth. Now, this never really explained how the hero dial got into the phone booth. This went all the way back to ancient Egypt, where they showed the first quote-unquote hero dial was a sundial. And I'm trying to figure out how that works, because remember, with a sundial, you're waiting on the sun to change position, and you're telling time for the shadows on the ground. But nevertheless, they went that far back. And they came up with a revelation about heroes. If you're granted the hero's power from the dial, then the hero on the other side loses their power. So essentially, if you dial up and you become the Flash here, then Wally West in his universe loses his power for that hour.
Oh.
All right. It sounds like a pulp version of the stock exchange.
It's a heady trip, let me tell you, because they revealed that this princess / priestess who ended up using the dial took this heroine's power just as a cataclysm was happening on her side and she was powerless to stop it.
Okay, this is the current book you're talking about, right?
Yeah, this is the current book talking about.
I'm probably going to download this through Comixology. I can't buy everything conventionally. I'm actually making at least a third of the transition to the digital world. So I still buy, just to the audience and to Donna, our favorite comic book seller. I'm not going to commit everything to digital download, but some stuff that I just can't get around to going to get physically, I'm probably going to download. Actually, probably after this broadcast, download Dial H for Hero. Quickly, I got to make a transition, Daryl, because we got time. Now that I mentioned Batman and Robin Zero, the reason why I mentioned it is because it made me think of a Versus segment.
Let's get ready to rumble!
All right, hopefully Michael Buffer won't sue me. Anyway.
I think you're safe.
Yeah. So the reason why I came up with this, you know, with this Versus segment, it was based on, I have to admit, because I really was not that familiar. I mean, I know how Damian Wayne came to be, but I missed it. I didn't get the actual visuals on it. I just knew about it. So after looking at it, I was like, wait a minute. We got to do a Versus on all the Robins. Dick Grayson versus Jason Todd versus Tim Drake versus Damian Wayne. Now,
hey, you're talking New 52? Because if you're talking New 52, scratch Tim Drake out of
it. Tim Drake, yep. Yeah, I scratch him off.
Well, that's another thing. Didn't we see, like, the latest Teen Titans? Wasn't Red Robin's no more?
I'm just telling you, all right?
No, he's still in it. Red Robin, well, I've been collecting it. He's still in the series. It's just that supposedly he was never Robin. Isn't that what was revealed like a month or so ago? Or
yeah, but unfortunately in Teen Titans 1, there's a picture of him flying with Batman across a rooftop.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah. Yeah, you're right. I have the issue. Yeah, he is in an issue with Batman.
All right, so right here.
He risks Batman.
This is where this Versus is already flawed to begin with, all right? And that's what I was trying to tell D-Burt behind the scenes. You see, until DC editorial get their thing right, then they're dumb. The only true Robin is Dick Grayson. Get back to me.
Okay. This is going to be horrible. I see what we're doing. This is going down to the...
Let's roll with it. Come on, man.
Okay.
I know you want to stick up for Damian. Let's see what he got.
Go for it, D-Burt. Go for it.
All right. Well, you know what? We still got a show to do. Let's go to a musical break quickly.
Oh, you see? Right. Come on, man. Let's do this.
We got to do it. Let's go to a musical break. And in homage of this potential conversation, let's go to Hong Kong Fooey, which is the... my sublime, Hong Kong Fooey, because I'm thinking of Daryl with this already. All right. My gamma irradiated blood is already boiling. So after Hong Kong Fooey, we're going to talk about which Robin is the best. And, of course, it's Damian.
Okay.
But we'll get back to – hold on, Ronan. We'll be back in a few moments. Hold on.
All right.
Who is this superhero? Sarge?
No!
Rosemary, the telephone operator?
No, I'm man.
Henry, the mild-mannered janitor?
Hong Kong Fooey, number one super guy. Hong Kong Fooey, quicker than a human eye. Oh, he's got style, a groovy smile, a body just won't stop. When the going gets rough, he's super tough.
Hong Kong Fooey, number one super guy. Hong Kong Fooey,
oh, he
That was Sublime from the Saturday Morning Cartoons redo. All these excellent collection of current artists that have done their take, modernized take on Saturday Morning Cartoon themes. So that was Hong Kong Phooey, Scatman Crothers. All right, folks. Again, the Comic Shop, the call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We have Black Ronin, friend of the show, as well as the great Daryl B. And before the break, we were getting into this whole notion of which Robin is the best. Of course, this is just opinion, but there were four Robins. Well, actually, there's more, but I'm going to say four for the sake of this conversation. Dick Grayson, Jason Todd, who was, I guess, Marvel's answer to Bucky, Tim Drake, and, of course, Damian Wayne. Now, Daryl, I'm going to open the floor up to you. I have great fondness for Dick Grayson because he's the original Robin, but tell us why you think he is ultimately the best Robin.
Easy. Listen, when it comes to being Robin, okay, part of the job with Robin is knowing that Batman could be taken out at any time, okay? Out of the ones you have just seen, out of the three Robins in this universe, okay, all right, because again, Tim Drake, DC eliminated Tim Drake, or else I would have a bigger decision on my hands, all right? Jason Todd is too much of an arrogant hothead, all right? And Damian Wayne is too much of a prick. You could give me future, Morrison did that future story where Damian Wayne assumed the cowl. But again, to me, what Robin is supposed to be is not a little Batman, not a little jerky of Batman. He's supposed to have the skills of Batman, yet keep Batman grounded, all right? He's supposed to be the positive to Batman's dark, all right? And the only guy on that list that does that was Dick Grayson, okay? Think about it. We often joked about it at the comic shop and everything. What Dick Grayson was, he was Superman, Batman with the ideals of Superman. He had all the athletics. He had all the brains. But he had a cheery, positive outlook at the end of the day. All right? Even when he became Nightwing. All right? He had all the detective things. All right? And he was someone who grew up through the ranks, and he was the first one to be accepted by the elder heroes as, you know what, he's earned his spot. When you have other interactions with heroes, how they look on Jason Todd? I want to slap that punk. How they look at Damian Wayne? I'm throwing this punk out the nearest freaking, you know, like air vent or something. They never earned other heroes' respect. They never brought it so that the other heroes could tolerate Batman by his presence. All they did was make things more obnoxious for him. Like I said, Dick Grayson, Dick Grayson is the best idea of example of what Robin should be.
All right, let's open this up to Black Ronin. Any thoughts on this? What are your thoughts?
Who's the best Robin?
Who do you find, for you, personally, who do you gravitate toward more? Who do you find more interesting? I mean, whatever barometer you're using.
I would say Tim Drake. I haven't read a lot of Tim Drake, but when I read him before the big change to the New 52, and even now during the 52, he always seemed to grasp a little bit more of the intellect or the detective side of what who Batman is. Compared to what Dick Grayson, who I always thought was always a superior athlete. I always thought he was always a better athlete than Bruce Wayne was. I mean, Bruce Wayne, he trained to get to that level where just by genetics, Dick Grayson was, of course, a natural acrobat. So learning all the physical aspects seemed to just come, of course, much more naturally to him. And he eventually learned how to become a great detective and everything, but he always seemed to lack that internal, I don't know, inquisitiveness or being able to pick things up quickly, where Tim Drake seemed to have that more investigative mind to me. I mean, he works harder, of course, at the physical stuff, you know, as far as the combat and everything. But I always thought Tim Drake was more the interesting Robin, personally.
Yeah, you know what? The more I think about it, you start to see, I don't know if this was intentional, probably was accidental, but when you start to see the different Robins and get into the layering of these different characters, they, in some respect, they are aspects of Batman's personality. That, you know, if you put them all together, they might equal Batman more effectively. You know, if you think about Jason Todd and Tim Drake and Dick Grayson, all of them have their own unique personality, and they all have certain strengths. Like you said, Tim Drake, very good with computers, very, very much the detective. Jason Todd is more of that, has a Joker-esque vibe to him, where he's a little crazy. Obviously, he's a lot crazy. And there's a crazy aspect to Batman. Dick Grayson has more of that, as Daryl talked about, more of the noble spirit. He is Batman without all of the angst and the darkness. I mean, just by virtue of his costume. You know, especially his Robin costume, very bright and whatever, what have you. And an even early interpretation of Batman and Robin, he's the one with the puns. You know, he had pain, but he didn't internalize his pain the same way that Bruce Wayne did. Now the reason why I geared towards Damian Wayne is for a number of reasons. One, you have an actual biological connection between Damian Wayne and Bruce Wayne. That is actually his son. Two, he was trained by the League of Assassins. So he has that connection. There's a bridge between Ra's al Ghul, Talia, and Batman. And actually, there's things about Batman that segue into how Spider-Man is. Follow me on this. When you see Norman Osborn always longs for Peter Parker to be the son he never had. And that's pretty much the same relationship that Ra's al Ghul has for Bruce Wayne. He always saw Bruce Wayne as the ultimate successor to his throne or his his enterprise, his criminal enterprise.
Yeah, the organization, yeah.
His organization. So when I see Damian has a lot of respect for Batman, but he also has a certain degree of not disrespect in some ways, because he was trained to be an assassin, and his training was likened to Batman. You know, he was trained at all. I mean, to be young, he was trained to really have a genius level intellect. He's the dark side of Batman. He is Nemesis. He is what Nemesis is in a different comic book property. But he is definitely a darker Batman. It's that dark versus light aspect to Damian that makes him a more compelling Robin. Now, I don't necessarily disagree with Daryl's analysis of Dick Grayson, but there's a lot more potential Because this kid, he is arrogant, and you have to remember, Batman, for all intents and purposes, is an a-hole. You also see flourishes of Batman in Damian. He is Batman's son. The only difference is that he's also Talia and Ra's al Ghul's son. That the warring aspects of his personality make him compelling. Now, if DC did it right, they could open up a whole bag of worms with this kid.
Okay, but here's where I disagree with you on this, right? It's not a new idea. Think about it. Kingdom Come. That was Batman's son. Al-E Omniscious or something like that. That was his son there. If you look at the Brotherhood of the Bat and all of that with the dystopian thing, that was Damian Wayne. Didn't use Damian Wayne. They said he was Bruce Jr., but it's not a new concept, all right? And the thing about Robin is he's supposed to balance out Batman.
Yeah,
you're not
I think
supposed
that is
to have
crucial.
Batman and little Batman. You're supposed to have a balance. Robin's supposed to be the lighter side of him. When has Damian Wayne ever kept things light?
Well,
that girl want to punch him out.
It's the tension that makes it. Listen, you're creating these rules to Robin. You're talking about those rules. Those rules apply from 1940. This is 2012.
Those rules were. Excuse me. When Tim Drake became Robin in A Death in the Family, or after A Death in the Family, when Tim Drake became Robin, he was trying. Remember, he was trying, and Black could back me up on this. He didn't want to become Robin. He was trying to get Dick Grayson to abandon the Nightwing persona
and become
Robin again, because he said Batman always needs a Robin to balance him out. Tim Drake said this. And then Dick looked at Tim like, Tim, you did all the research. This was a detective-type thing that Bruce can do, because at that time, Tim did discover who Bruce Wayne was. You know what? Why don't you become Robin? Hey, you only got the brain for it. I can help you learn the athletics. You know we'll put you through the paces. And that's how Tim became Robin.
I hear what you're saying, but there's also an element of fatherhood here where you're seeing a maturation point for Bruce Wayne. Bruce Wayne has always been a pseudo father. But in this case, he is a real father. There's a lot more at stake here. And the fact that when you're dealing with – one thing about Batman's mind, what makes Batman, as Superman called him, the deadliest man on the planet – what makes him deadly is because he has a Machiavellian mindset. And the only person that comes close to thinking multiple steps ahead is Damian. Damian is to me, the closest one. There's another thing, too. With all these Robins, at some point they get sick and tired of being Robin, and they develop their own personalities. With Damian, Damian's the only one that really wants to take the mantle of the Bat. He wants to be Batman's successor.
I didn't mean he deserves it.
Did you see the Black Nerd? Did you read any of that with Dick Grayson as Batman? Did you ever read Prodigal? He didn't want to take it, but here's the mantle. See, again, you're liking Damian because he's a little Batman. But a little Batman is not what Robin is supposed to be.
Well, he's a worse. He's not. He's a little deeper than a little. I mean, this guy is a. He's a little a-hole, and you keep on taking away that Batman is an a-hole. Batman had plans, and even though Ra's al Ghul was involved in that. And what was the run? The infamous run that everyone talks about from JLA, from like 10 years ago, 12 years ago.
What, Morrison?
Yes, Morrison's run of JLA. It was there. Well, he was the ultimate a-hole because it was his plans that were stolen by Ra's al Ghul that jeopardized the entire Justice League. They never looked at Batman the same again from that incident.
Okay.
Because now that we have a DC 52, that never existed. but in theory.
Oh, it will exist. It will eventually exist. We all know it's going to happen. I mean,
well,
it's just a matter of time before they do it.
It's already happened.
Hold on. Batman makes decisions that, you know, he has the balls to make these decisions. He is the ultimate a-hole, and his son is a miniature a-hole. It is the biological thing that's going on there, partially.
All right, but I'm going to what Robin is supposed to be. And Robin
it's about personality.
Was supposed
I don't think he's biological.
Balance. You're loving the personality, but you know what? It should be Batman and Little Batman because there isn't a Robin there. I'm reading the adventures of Little Bruce Wayne. That's what Damian Wayne is.
All right.
This is Little Bruce Wayne.
Hold on. We got another call. Let's open the line. Let's open it. We got about 7 minutes. Now that the show is getting juicy, I'm going to have to go to After the Radio in a few moments. But that person left. What the hell? Okay. I don't know what happened, but someone called in and they quickly blanked out.
I don't think the fact that he's Bruce Wayne's son should factor in how good or not good a Robin he is. I mean, I do agree that it did help for a little bit of intrigue and it helps give a different dynamic, per se. But, I mean, just because somebody's not a biological child doesn't necessarily mean that there's no connection there, there's no you know, similar spirit type thing going on or whatever it is. And I think that Bruce Wayne showed a lot of that with Dick Grayson and with Tim Drake.
He has literally adopted these children. Well, now young men. So, I mean, but I'm just saying that there's a little extra going on. Not that Dick Grayson isn't really Bruce Wayne's son or Jason Todd.
I mean,
Todd.
He is. He is,
but with this new and the potential for loss is going to be greater. But
yeah, I'm still waiting for Alfred to put a shotgun to this kid's head.
But this kid is also Ra's al Ghul's son, and we know he's not afraid to go to those pits.
Those limits. Yeah.
But that's not Robin.
I understand that. But my only thing is gentlemen, and everyone has their entitled to their opinion. None of these Robins, except for Damian, wants to be Robin for too long. Dick Grayson set out on his own at some point and say, you know, he had friction with Batman, which I guess is very much a father-son thing. But he had friction. He ended up becoming Nightwing. Red Robin, no real friction, but he became Red Robin. Jason Todd is the ultimate because now he's the Red Hood. He's Joker in some way. So I just think Damian is the one that wants to be Batman.
For what reason, though? I mean, I'm not sure I'm seeing the motivation of why Damian would want to be Batman. Just because he doesn't think he deserves it? I mean, that goes back to the kid being a jerk thing. I mean, he just thinks he's just entitled to be the Batman. So, I mean, it's an entitlement thing there, and that's not cool. So,
And we've seen it with Kid Miracle Man. We've seen it with Jason Todd. We've seen it with people like Tara. We've seen it. Anytime you get a snot-nosed punk that thinks I'm ready for the big time, yo, put the spotlight on me. I can do this. I don't want to listen to any of your guys' experience. What happens? Kid ends up dead. So I'm waiting. I'm waiting for Alfred and butt this kid.
We only have a few minutes remaining, so we're going to have to continue this at some point next week. But I do want to throw out there AVX 11, Daily News covered it. There's no fake news. I mean, we might as well stop the spoiler alert, because as soon as you open up the morning paper, they tell you what's going to happen.
They tell you everything.
Hasn't Professor X died multiple times? Why is this so unique? Or disappeared?
Yes, he died after Onslaught. Yes, he died. He died way back in 56. He died. He died. It ceases to lose its impact. And again, you're putting out, oh, it's big news. He's dead. I'm looking at it. He's died more times than Jean Grey. And Jean Grey constantly gets ripped for it. Listen, you're expecting some groundbreaking moment. Oh, my God, Professor X is dead.
Yeah, it doesn't
mean. Meanwhile, you have ripped You have ripped his character down. The way Bendis has written Professor X with the whole Illuminati and everything, and the way Fraction has written him, and the way Land and them have written him, you have ripped down his thing. That the pristine image is gone. So why should I care? This, you know what this is? This is a lost situation. You're getting rid of a character in a crappy storyline, a crappy crossover, and just because of the name, oh my God, this is big. No, this ain't Patrick Stewart dying.
All right. Sorry. Darryl, we're going to have to cut it because I got to go into the next room to do Afternoon Radio. We have a special interview with Sandra Fondufay, yay, Fond. Gentlemen,
thanks,
as always, we seem to have these festive conversations. We didn't even talk about. We didn't even get a chance to talk about Red Hulk versus Green Hulk. I actually like Red Hulk. I actually think Red Hulk is more compelling now than the Jolly Green Giant. I just do. He's got a hot robotic girlfriend. That interests me.
Just grab your
hot robotic girlfriend.
Yeah, son. Grab your little teddy bear and sleep with it, because Red Hulk.
All right. And there's a Red She-Hulk that's talking. Anyway. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. We'll do it again next week. Black,
right.
We always appreciate support.
Enjoy.
All right.
All right. Peace.
Peace out.
Spawn for the beard?
I think not.
Anybody know who Willie Lynch was? Anybody? Raise your hand. No one? He was a vicious slave owner in the West Indies. The slave masters in the colony of Virginia were having trouble controlling their slaves, so they sent for Mr. Lynch to teach them his methods. The word lynching came from his last name. His methods were very simple, but they were diabolical. Keep the slave physically strong, but psychologically weak and dependent on the slave master. Keep the body, take the mind. I and every other professor on this campus are here to help you to find, take back, and keep your righteous mind. Because obviously you have lost it.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor, all hail funkin' lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold, born in a cosmos, where no time and space do exist, vibe in the midst of the chaos, mortals label me as a logger.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, D-Bert, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Yes, yes, yes. September 16th, 2012, the year of our Lord. Welcome to the Duality Double Matinee Show. This is the second half. We're batting second, batting perhaps the best. No, I can't say that. The comic shop has its place as well. Folks, this is AfroNerd for AfroNerd Radio, or AfroNerd featuring Captain Kirk. The call-in number, by the way, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We are expecting a special guest. Her name is Sandra Fondufay. She has a movie called Ye Fon that is also a project via Kickstarter, a Kickstarter campaign. An excellent movie, an excellent premise, so I do look forward to speaking to this young lady. Before we get into the discourse, we have a lot more show also, folks, by the way, after the interview. However, how I always do this, we always play some Muzak, urban alternative, funk, hip-hop, jazz, you name it, we play it. This is a classic, His Royal Badness. Party up. Prince, we'll be back in a few moments. You know what? Let's groove. Back once again. That was a classic from the Dirty Mind LP, or albums when they had such a thing. Prince, Party Up. Okay, folks, welcome once again after featuring Captain Kirk. And speaking of the captain, Captain, it's time.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
I know it's the Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk show, but I just want to say this real quick. Forget all the JLA. Let's drop a Shazam movie. JLA doesn't, they don't know what they're doing over there. Let's drop a Shazam movie. And let's get the show started.
Yeah. That might happen.
that might happen. You know, listen, it's going to happen. Well, might. It will happen eventually, Captain. But, you know, I think Dwayne The Rock Johnson might be involved in that some way. You know, I think. He might be Black Adam, which is, I guess, a joke within itself. that he would be Black Adam, but I mean he looks like Black Adam, but you know it'll be interesting. It will be interesting. Again, folks, we're expecting actress filmmaker Sandra Fond du Fay, who has a movie called Ye Fond. I would definitely implore our listenership to go to Kickstarter.com. Again, Kickstarter.com, the infamous / famous crowdfunding website where all kinds of projects are getting a lot of attention and getting a lot of funding. And in this case, I would assume, cause that's one thing I would ask her, has the film been completed? Because we're looking at a trailer, and it looks like there's some folks of note that are involved in it. The gentleman that played The Haitian, that was his character name, The Haitian, on Heroes, he's involved in that. So I'm interested in how this is proceeding. And, again, for full disclosure, I received an email from, I believe, her publicist, her representative. And the premise of this movie I just find fascinating, Captain. And, you know, I have to applaud this lady's efforts for really trying to produce this film, to make this film happen, because we're so accustomed to Tyler Perry fare. We're accustomed to the same old tropes. So for a film that is coming from an African perspective, we're not even talking about African-American folks, we're talking about an African village, an African woman who seeks to, I believe, she'll get into greater detail, but seeks to gain a Euro education, leaving her village, and the village male elders have a problem with that. And I think maybe sanctioned for death. The character is sanctioned for death. Again, Ye Fond, Y-E-F-O-N, Ye Fond. So I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued by the premise. What are your thoughts on this, Captain? Anything just on the premise of this film?
Based on the premise of what I've already saw, this is something that if it proceeds along the right path, it can get nominated for an Oscar. Now, people might say it's a bit premature, but it seems definitely she has the actors involved, the actors and the actresses involved that have the right chops. It's a great concept. We just see how it comes out. If it comes out along what I already see, this is something with the right energy behind it. You get nominated for an Oscar. Definitely get nominated. And it goes on to great things. The producers and everybody else, they go on to really great things. So it has my interest, It's not the same old trope, as we like to say here on this show. So it's something that we recommend that all you listeners look up, check out, get behind, and push. More lanes. Diversity. But we like this type of diversity. This is the good kind. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerds.
Yeah, I saw a California number during the comic shop broadcast, and she might have gotten confused with all that DC Robin geek talk, and she might have gotten confused with that show. Well, actually, you know what? I see. You know what, Captain? Hold on one moment. Let me not misspeak. Let me see if this is Ms. Du Fay. Actually, Captain, do you see the the caller, let me see. My computer seems to be acting up on me. Hold on one moment there, folks. Again, live radio, we accept my apologies on that. Let's see if I can bring her on in. Okay, that caller seems to have left. My shtick. Captain, I can't seem to do the shtick properly. Again, folks, we're waiting for. Okay, let's try it again. Ms. Du Fay?
Hello.
Yes.
This This is Sandra Guadalupe.
Welcome to Afro Nerd Radio.
Hey, thank you.
Listen, I love what you're doing.
Aww.
I love the premise. And I tell you what happened. I got this email, and I read what your film was about. And I said,
yeah.
Now this is not Tyler Perry. No disrespect to him. No disrespect to him. So walk us through a little bit. Walk us through just how you came up with this film idea. Just walk us through the premise and how is it faring with us being able to see this on the silver screen.
Well, my inspiration came from The Weirdest Place because I spent a lot of time on YouTube, right? I'm always looking for strange videos, and I came across certain videos talking about women and what they're going through, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. This is, how can this be happening to someone? I have to write the story. I have to tell it. And then I start doing more research, writing down facts, what happened to this woman, what the press said, what people said. And the more I wrote about it, the more I had a story. And I just realized that this is something that's going to make people are going to want to see this, and they're going to do something to help the girls out. So that's how I wrote it.
Now, it's called Yefan.
Yeah.
Is that the title character's name, or just what does the name have to do with the actual character?
Right. So Yefan is actually the lead character's name, but it's also my grandmother's name.
Oh.
And so I was like, if I'm going to see an African woman on the film, it better be my mom or my grandma's name. So I picked my grandmother's name because it means the mother of a king. And I like the meaning. It's very noble, very royal. So that's why I picked that name.
Now, has the film been completed, or is it still in the middle of production? Where are you as far as the film itself?
As far as that goes, we are in pre-production because right now we're raising funds to build it. But we're also doing auditions with cast a lot of characters. We just had some auditions in Cameroon yesterday. So we're in pre-production, I would say.
And also, what part of Africa are you from? What country in Africa are you from?
I'm from Cameroon. It's in Central Africa.
Okay. I guess the unfortunate part about Kickstarter, though, you cannot get funding internationally, or can you?
Man, you have no idea how unfortunate that is, because a lot of my supporters are in Cameroon, and they don't have, like, the credit card system, so that is true. It's very sad. But here we can, though, you know. It's a credit card. There's a debit card here.
and
you want to know something?
Yes.
We just got $10,000 right now. I'm just about, my heart is so happy.
Wow, yeah, actually it's moving, because I think I saw it earlier. It was like maybe at $4,000 or $5,000, so it's already at 10 now?
Yeah, it's actually at 14 or something.
Oh, 14.
Today.
Oh,
yesterday.
Yeah. Wow. No, so it's cooking,
right?
Now. It's cooking. It's cooking. I want to see that. I want to see that. I also have a partner on the show, of course. Captain Kirk, introduce yourself. I know you have a question for this young lady.
Hello,
uh-huh.
Hello. How's it going?
Ooh, who's that with that voice?
That's the captain. It's me. All right.
Hi,
how's it going?
Good, how is it going?
All right, now here's my question.
Okay.
One of the hardest things for independent filmmakers to do is to get decent talent. Now, looking at the trailer, it seems that you was able to circumvent that whole situation and get, you know, some really good talent. Because a lot of times, independent filmmakers, they have small budgets, so you cannot reel in the top-notch actors.
Exactly.
Now, how are you able to circumvent that?
I only have one answer, and it's the answer that drives me every day. When you want something bad enough, and you put it out there, like, just keep believing in your head, it's going to start happening. It's the funniest thing. But literally, I would say in my head, like, I watched one of the actors on the internet, I was saying, wow, I wish I could meet this guy. And I met him the next day. And, you know, talking about my film, and I just tell them what I'm trying to do. People really do have good hearts, and you know, in LA, I found out, because if you believe in something and you're as passionate, and they see that, they will go because of your passion.
Okay, so in other words, because you believe it so strong, you were able to get them to believe it along with you.
Exactly. That was. I think that was the strongest factor.
There you go. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Would you say that there's a burgeoning film industry coming from Africa or Cameroon specifically? We all know about Nigeria and Nollywood. You know, we have Bollywood in India. We have Nollywood in Nigeria. How does Cameroon fit in that equation?
As of now, you know, that's one of the things that I'm trying to work on, because we still have a few films being shot at a local level, but little films. This will be the first time that a big film will be shot with international cast and proper crew, cameras, and all that. So I hopefully this is the start of a new cameo whatever thing. We don't know what the name is going to be, but we'll see how that goes. And, based on what I'm getting, people are really hardworking. They really want to get a good product out there and start branding ourselves in a good way, because my country is so beautiful. I mean, we're amazing people. But, you know, resources and all kinds of stuff comes in, and I think we're ready to go forward right now.
And you know, speaking about your country,
how has
the African-American community embraced this concept? You know, there's always been this push and pull aspect of Africans and African Americans. In other words, we have this longing for a connection with Africa, and yet, just on what you just told me, that it's a beautiful country. There, you know, even though we call ourselves African Americans, many of us know very little about Africa.
That's true.
Have you gotten any kind of connection with African Americans in helping you with this film, or you know, whether it's culturally or financially? Have you gotten
Man, I have to tell you one thing. You know, actually moving to the United States even before this film, and actually getting to know your culture and the culture of the African American people, we're just the same. We have the same kind of interests, the same kind of things that we like. We call it different names, but it's the same. And what happened is, when I started working on this project, when I told African-American friends I had, they really connected to it. And on my team right now, I have a couple of African-American people. And so what I did was, with one of my characters is an African-American woman. So she's going to come to Africa and discover the culture, meanwhile helping the lead character. So I put that in the script, because I think it's something the world needs to see, how beautiful it will be when we come together. So I put that in my story.
And that's something else I want to clear up for our audience as well. This is not a period movie. It's based in the present, correct?
It is based in the present, yes.
And just to kind of backtrack it again, we're talking about a young woman who is she seeking a Western education? I mean, what exactly is the premise again?
Yes. She's seeking a Western education, the chance to go to school, because boys can, but women cannot. And she's seeking to just have that chance to get to know something if she wants to.
And she is in direct defiance with her village elders.
Yeah, they don't want women to... You know what? Just actually, for the purposes of the story, what happens is the elders, in their minds, they're trying to protect the culture. Because when you compare the village women with the women in the city, the women in the city, because they're more exposed, more independent, they are more defective, they tend to get divorced faster, they tend to like fight and go out. So that's how it seems to them. So for them, if they feel like, okay, to protect the family, what do we do? Okay, let women stay at home and take care of the kids and not have to work. But that used to work in some point in time. Right now, my character is trying to say that tradition is amazing, but there's some things that have to change with time, because the world is moving, times are changing. I want to go to school if the guys can, because I feel that I might make a great teacher too. I may make a great doctor, But how am I going to know if I can't even do it? That's the whole idea.
Wow. Sorry, yeah. can you hold on for a few moments? Normally we take a musical break.
Okay.
After the musical break, and by the way, it's a question I always ask of our guests. And being that you're coming from the motherland, I have to ask you the question. Can you stand some funk music?
Can I do what?
Can you stand some funk music?
Can I stand pop music?
Funk music?
I'm sorry, I don't know what that means.
Okay.
What is funk music?
Well, that's a good question. James Brown is funk music.
Oh, yeah, I love music. I love James Brown's music. Is that what
I thought you would. Hold on one moment.
Oh,
this is your introduction to funk music, the Godfather of Soul. Give it up or turn it loose. James Brown will be back with more Sandra Fondufe. Hold on. Turn It Loose, that was the late Godfather of Soul, James Brown. I had to introduce Sandra to some American funk just to show her that not all things were lost in the Middle Passage. So again, that was James Brown. Did you like that, Sandra?
Oh, yeah, that was dancing.
Oh, yeah, well, that goes to show you that, you know, there's some things that we still maintain.
I have to give it to the African Americans. You guys can sing. Woo!
Yeah, it comes from the root, though.
It does.
I believe the captain has a question for you. Captain, what's up?
Yes. Now, I've heard men all over the world
put the blame on God or put the blame on religion at times.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is what I'm driving towards.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that men all over the world now are scared, and I have to use the word scared, of women being self-empowered? Because education, you become self-empowered. In your own words, your own opinion.
That's in my opinion, I'm speaking out of experience. Men get intimidated by me all the time because I can pay for my own stuff and I can do my own things. I have my own mind, and I don't. For some reason, they're intimidated. But I believe it's because men have an ego, and sometimes men feel like they're the boss. And meanwhile, that's okay. Sometimes I feel like the perfect balance is knowing that you are the boss, but she can be the boss lady too. And so let's do it that way. But as to the reason why, I'm still asking that myself. I don't know why.
Right. That's a fair answer. Now, hopefully after the movie comes out and everything, this can come more to the forefront and we can get a lot more answers on this.
You know what? When the movie comes out, we're going to ask the questions to people who watched it and put it out to the world. And people on Earth are very smart, and I like asking questions on my polls or my blog because you will get an answer. You'll be like, oh, I didn't think of this, But, that's a good idea. I'll do that because I want to know. I'm dying to know the reason why. What is that why? I really want to know. So thank you for that question. That's a good question.
Oh, you're welcome. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Would you think that it's important for African Americans to invest in African cinema to really, in order to make a real industry? And we always talk about Tyler Perry, what he's doing over here, but do you think it's also equally important to gain international funding to really bridge the gap between Africans and African Americans, especially with cinema?
I think it's very important. I think it's one of the most important things since the word important was made. Because African people have a lot of money. There's a lot of money in Africa. But where to invest it to get, because the whole idea is how can we as a people go forward? What can we do to get advanced? But there has been this little, I don't want to say hatred, but misunderstanding between both races, not racist, but both of us, because we each think we're better or worse or whatever. But I think a time has come when we have to come together, because even here in the United States, when I look, the best in every entertainment is always an African-American person, and that's amazing. I can only imagine when the two come together, what is going to happen. It will be the media as a whole will move forward, because it's a beautiful combination, I find. And on my film, we have that. We're going to see how it works with this one, because we have, for the soundtrack of the film, Kelly Clark, who's African-American, and she's going to be working with some artists from my tribe who can speak our language. And I'm dying to see what kind of music comes out of that,
Well, I think as time goes on, you're going to see more efforts to try to make that connection. Again, we have a president who's not only African American, but he's truly African American in the sense that he has Kenyan roots. Your film, and I get a sense that there's always been this talk of Pan-Africanism. So hopefully, and I believe the gentleman that I mentioned before that was played in Heroes, he is of Haitian descent, isn't he?
Yeah. Are you talking about Jimmy John Lewis?
That's correct, right.
Yes, he
actually
is.
I think we have a caller. Let's open up the lines for a moment. I think we have a caller. Let's see what this caller wants.
Okay.
He might want to ask you a question.
Okay,
caller, welcome to Afro Radio. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from. We're speaking to actress and filmmaker Sandra Fondufe. 702? Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Yes. Hello?
Hello.
All right. I don't know what's going on there. Maybe they're just a little nervous. I don't know. One more question, and then we're going to have to go to our second segment. And again, I want you back because I want to hear you when it's out. when it's fully released, and when you and when you've gotten all your funding. I know you're going to get your funding.
Thank you.
What are your expectations with the film? Once it's out, what would you like for it to do?
Oh, ultimately. Man, I have to put a disclaimer. I will go crazy with my expectations. But, no. Well, you know, I'm such a, in the olden days, they would say dreamer, because my head is in the clouds. And, you know, maybe that's why I'm here. But I see my film coming out to be the Sarafina of 2014, the Hotel Rwanda of 2014. I think it's going to go way bigger than those films ever were, because I'm very much in touch with my African side. And even though we have media in Africa, it's still relatively new, and I believe I have what it takes, and I'm willing to go the extra mile to make sure the content gets to the viewers, meaning I want all Africans to watch it. I want the Americans to watch it. I want the Chinese to watch it, everybody to watch it. And because of that, I hope it's going to touch them. Because when I was writing this film, I was filled with so much pain and passion, and I wanted to come through on the screen. And if it does come through on the screen, I think we're going to go really far. I want everybody to be talking about this film. I want everybody to be saying, oh, my God, I have to sponsor a girl. I want everybody to be saying, oh, my God, what am I doing with my life? That girl is 22. I want to inspire people. That's why I was born. I want to inspire my friends, inspire people who don't know me to do something with their life to help other people. That's what I really want to happen when this film comes out. And of course,
well,
one more very important thing. I want the image of a naturally beautiful African woman to be sold in the media. I want it to be found attractive and to become a brand.
Well, there's a reason why I had you on here. And that's what I wanted to hear. And I will try my best. Catherine and myself, we will try our best to push your film. I've been tweeting about it. I've been putting it on Facebook. I've been trying my best to let people know about this movie. So trust me, we're going to do our part to help you with this. And I'm confident that you will succeed with this film. Because we need a film like this as people of African descent, whether you're coming from Africa, from the Americas, from the Caribbean, and even beyond being African, everyone needs to see this film. But especially, we have to start to see Black people in our totality. We've got to see the bigger picture. So, Sandra, you got our support. We appreciate you coming through. I'm going to email you to keep in touch. And when it's completed, let us know. We can talk about it again. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, brother. Can I ask you one last question before you go?
Oh, sure, certainly.
How is your day going? You're asking about me, and I didn't have a chance to ask. How's your day going so far?
My day? My day
yeah.
is great. Since I'm speaking to you, I'm in great shape.
Oh, she's the best. She's the best.
Let me tell you something. Before we let you go, I want to tell you something.
Yeah.
One of the things about Afro Nerd Radio, the reason
yeah.
why it's even called Afro Nerd is because there's this perception that Black folk are intelligent, that we're minstrels, that we're very negative, and this show highlights different kinds of music, different kinds of film. We're all into promoting a different type of Black person, and the fact that you said that you are very attractive, the fact that you are talking about the natural beauty of Black women, that's something that we also promote. So what you said and what your film is about is very crucial to what we are about. So like minds,
wow.
think alike. That's why we contacted you.
Thank you.
As always,
thank you so much, brother.
We appreciate it, and trust me, we'll be in touch, and we're gonna tap your film when you finish it, and we hope
yeah.
to get you back.
Man, thank you. Thank you so much. And
thank
you too. Thanks for Deep Voice too.
Okay. Thank you. We'll see you next time.
Yeah.
Okay, folks, listen. That was Ms. Sandra Fon Dufay. She has a film called Ye Fon. I want you to check out this film. I want you to go to her page on Kickstarter. Give her more funding. Stop funding. Well, listen, I'm not going to tell you to stop funding Tyler Perry. I'm not going to tell you that. But this is different, folks. This is different. We need to see different depictions of black folk. We have to educate the world. We have to educate ourselves, Captain. Any thoughts on Ms. Dufay's appearance? I mean, I thought that this was important.
It was definitely refreshing. She was the best. She carried herself very well, very jovial, nice attitude. That's what you have to have when you're trying to sell anything to the people. There you
well,
go.
You know something, Captain. You know, I'm looking at, you know, I mentioned Afropunk. I went to Afropunk in Brooklyn a couple of weeks ago. And you see all these natural-looking black women. Their bodies were correct, not to be too, you know, not to be too salacious after that conversation. But their bodies were on point. Their hair wasn't, you know, no Caucasian hair hats, no Afro-Saxon toupees, natural, beautiful hair, natural, clean, beautiful. And I said, I was actually somewhat taken aback. Like, it brought me back to if I were in the 1970s, I felt like when we were really about black is beautiful, and it is. It was something, I wish we could see more women of color embracing a natural appearance. You know, just be yourself. But where gluing Asian and Indian hair on your skull, that's telling the world something that I feel uncomfortable about. I'm just being honest. There's something about that that disturbs me. So I'm glad she said what she said. What are your thoughts, Captain? We're going to go to a musical break, but what are your thoughts?
Well, I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you. You know, the regular hair, the natural hair, and, the slim waist with the big booty, that helps also a lot. We talk about that. It helps a lot, you know. Just be yourself. Just be yourself.
Well, you know something, Captain? You know, I'm not going to say that you can't put your hair, at least you can wear your hair however you want to. But I think with the overindulgence in wigs, you know, if there's something going on when you see so many women of color with that type of vibe going on, that it's sending a message that I'm uncomfortable with. You know, again, wear what you want to wear your hair. You know, there's freedom of speech. You know, you can look a certain way, but there's something about the weaves and the lace fronts that it's giving a negative message, I think. All right. As promised, more Muzak. We played a little bit of classic music. Let's get into some black rock. This is a classic, another classic actually, by Fishbone, Freddy's Dead. We'll be back in a few moments with more discourse. Let's groove. Please. All right, enough of that. Again, that was Fishbone actually covering the Curtis Mayfield classic, Freddy's Dead, Freddy's Dead. All right, folks, back once again. Afternerd featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afternerd Radio. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Something quick, Captain. I don't think I even told you this yet. We're working on a number of other guests. I'm working on Tony Danza. After Tony Danza has a book out about his, actually, I guess his second career as far as being a public school teacher. I know he did a reality show centered around him being a teacher. So I know that he has a new book that I think the book is called I'd Like to Apologize for All of My Teachers, something to that effect, something about kind of a cute title about apologizing to all of his teachers now that he himself is a teacher. So I'd like to get him on. Also, I'm working on a perhaps next week, if I cross our fingers, I was able to contact a Ms. What's her name? Lena Dawes. Lena Dawes. She's an author, and actually I saw her written up in a blog called Racialicious. And the name of the book that she's writing is called What Are You Doing Here? A Black Woman's Life and Liberation in Heavy Metal. Let me repeat that again. What Are You Doing Here? A Black Woman's Life and Liberation in Heavy Metal. So I contacted her behind the scenes, so now we just have to work on scheduling. So I'm going to try to get her on, if not Wednesday, maybe Sunday, the following Sunday. But I think just by the title of the book, it's her involvement as a black rock aficionado, and the whole deal about, you know, going against tropes, Captain. Black folks aren't supposed to like rock and roll music, even though we invented the genre. So she wrote a book about it, and she even noted, Captain, that our show is mentioned in her book. So when I put out the feelers to her about wanting to have her on the show, she said, I already know you because I mentioned you in my book. I'll tell you more about that behind the scenes, but I'm extremely grateful for the mentioning. Our show is being mentioned in her book about rock music. So hopefully we'll have Ms. Dawes on. Something else I want to mention, Captain, just anecdotally. I was thinking about Lincoln, the film, upcoming film about the 16th president of the United States, Abraham Lincoln. Are you familiar with this thing, Captain, this new Steven Spielberg vehicle coming up?
Yes I am. I saw the coming attractions and a few articles and a few write-ups about the movie, so yes I am familiar.
Yeah, the reason why I'm mentioning this, well, first of all, I have to give kudos to actor Daniel Day-Lewis. Phenomenal actor, especially in Gangs of New York. I mean, the number of films that he's been in that he is one of the he's probably going to be one of the greats, if not already considered one of the greats. And the makeup with him as Lincoln is unnerving. I mean, literally, he looks like Lincoln. So that part of it is fine. Of course, we know Lincoln to be the great emancipator, Republican. Many Republicans refer or defer to Lincoln when it comes down to heralding the rights of black people. So I'm thinking about this film, and on occasion, Captain, I'm always into research, I'm always into scholarship, I'm always reading about anecdotal data, I'm always reading about something. So I'm reading about Lincoln. He's the great emancipator. I'm not so sure about his personal feelings about black people. There's things that people do politically, and then there's things about how they really feel. I know that LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson, that he wasn't necessarily personally fond of black people. I mean, he's used there's footage, there's audio of him using the N-word in the White House, that kind of thing. He was a Southern guy. Anyway, I'm looking up a whole bunch of different information about different heroes. So one of my heroes, the great congressman from Harlem, Adam Clayton Powell Jr. I'm looking him up. He's a big hero of mine. I have a number of heroes. He's one of the tops for me. I'm looking him up, and I'm thinking about the whole notion of what a black person is supposed to look like. Obviously, with our experiences, Captain, as African-Americans and the diaspora and miscegenation and slavery, we come in all colors, phenotypes, you name it. So in my mind, Adam Clayton Powell Jr. was probably one of the blacker people, maybe not phenotypically, but mentally, what he was all about. He was the quintessential black person. However, he did come from mixed lineage. I mean, all of us to a certain degree do come from mixed lineage, but his was more pronounced. And there was a time that he toyed with passing when he was a much younger man. And there's a story, I'm going to connect this with Lincoln. This is why history is a living thing, Captain. History is more than just reading a book and just taking from what that one book says. You have to read multiple books to get an essence of a person. So I'm reading about Lincoln, and then I segue to Adam Clayton Powell Jr. And because of how he looked, he at times had been mistaken for being a white person. At times he had been mistaken. Until obviously into adulthood, when he became Adam Clayton Powell Jr., you knew he was black. Anyway, as a younger person, he played off on that sometimes. He admitted that. So I'm reading about Adam Clayton Powell Jr. having been a student at Colgate University, probably one of the most famous graduates of Colgate University. During the summers off, or during the summer while he was a student at Colgate University, he did some part-time work. He was a bellhop. He was a bellhop at a hotel where Robert Lincoln was staying. Now, who's Robert Lincoln? Robert Lincoln was Abraham Lincoln's living son. His son, Abraham Lincoln, was assassinated, and in the early 1900s, his son, who was elderly by this time, was a person of note himself. He never reached the heights of his father, but he was the Secretary of War, and he was an attorney. In advanced age, it was pretty well known that he was somewhat racist toward black people. Now, mind you, his father, Captain, was the great emancipator. But he became known in local circles for being pretty racist. He had a thing, he had a bugaboo about black people. What does this have to do with Adam Clayton Powell? Well, it was known that in handling Robert Lincoln, the staff at this hotel, the black staff, were told, you really can't deal with this guy. He doesn't want you handling his luggage. If it was known that if a black person tried to pick up his bags to help him, he would wrap his hands with his cane. He would knock the black person's hand away from his luggage with his cane. He was that ruthless, that disrespectful to black people. Again, you're talking about 1924, 1925, 1926. So he didn't want black folks around him helping him. Guess who helped him? Adam Clayton Powell Jr. Adam Clayton Powell Jr. picked up his luggage and snickered when he did it. And the staff also snickered that Adam Clayton Powell Jr. ended up helping Robert Lincoln with his luggage, all because Robert Lincoln did not know that Adam Clayton Powell, the future indefatigable leader of black folk before Dr. King. He was the most powerful black person in Washington, pre-Dr. King, that this man helped him with his luggage, not knowing that a black person picked up your luggage anyway. Who shot you? Who shot you? Is this an anecdotal story I want to tell? I thought it was fascinating, Captain. What are your thoughts on this? I'm going to mention some of these things every once in a while.
I think it's very truthful, of course it is, but it's also very comical because you added in that who shot you. You know, I one-upped you. Who shot you? You know?
Yeah, well, I mean.
Excellent. It's excellent.
But see, it reminds you that when you read up, I read up about Robert Lincoln. I read up about Abraham Lincoln. And that's why it's important to read. See, no one's really out there making the connective. I mean, that's just an anecdotal thing. But Adam Clayton Powell Jr. is a historical figure within his own right, as are the Lincolns, Abraham and Robert. But if you just read one story, you'll get this, you know, you will not know really about Robert Lincoln in this way. You know, he never reached the heights of his father, and he had somewhat of a distant relationship with his father. And also, anecdotally, ironically, Robert Lincoln, for some odd reason, he bore witness to other presidential assassinations, which is a weird thing. He didn't see his father get assassinated. He was called to come to his father's side once he found out that he was shot. But other assassinations that took place of presidents, he was always in proximity of these other, not that he did it, but it's just something that was to note about him, that for some reason he was always around in the vicinity when other presidents were assassinated. So that's just another anecdotal thing about Robert Lincoln. But I thought it was funny, because actually I'm expecting it in the mail. I ordered Adam Clayton Powell Jr.'s autobiography. I love this. He's a hero of mine, definitely. Sharp, witty, polished. You know, listen. I have to look for these folks, Captain. I can't look at the Wakas. I can't look at the Little Waynes for inspiration. So I have to go back and revisit W.E.B. Du Bois. I have to revisit Adam Clayton Powell Jr. I have to revisit Frederick Douglass. And I would implore our listenership to revisit some of these heroes. This is your estate, people. Now we scoff so much, Captain, at that's old school. He's a quote unquote old school Negro. He's old school. I don't want to listen to James Brown. I'm about Waka. Waka's what's happening. Who's that kid that I just mentioned him last week from Chicago?
Chief Keef.
Yeah, Chief Keef. Chief Keef is where it's at. All right, folks, that's all right. That's all right. But you know something? Other folks embrace their legacy. Black people have a rich estate. You got to look at it that way. It's your inheritance. Adam Clayton Powell is my inheritance. So I'm definitely going to go back and look up on the man because I'm proud of him. I'm proud of what he's accomplished. And before there was Barack Obama, there is a timeline to get to a Barack Obama. So I mention these stories anecdotally on occasion because you have to. You have to. Thoughts, Captain? We got about 3 minutes. I didn't expect that. There's a lot more I want to talk about, but those time constraints.
Well, this is the only thing that people need to understand about Lincoln. It wasn't so much whether Lincoln liked black people or did not like black people. When you're dealing with the whole Civil War situation, it was all about whether free labor versus labor that you have to work for. Well, here's the situation. In an industrialized nation, slavery makes no sense. You need a system to turn everybody into wage slaves. That's the reason why slaves eventually got freed. That's why you got freed in England. That's why you got freed over here. That's the reason. Let me repeat that. In an industrialized nation, slavery makes no sense. You need a system to turn everybody into slaves, hence wage slavery. And that's what you are today. So the bankers were on the move then. So there you have it. So ultimately, that's what it was. Okay? If you have slavery, it doesn't work the same way.
You know, folks, we've got about 2 minutes remaining, and we will pick this up on Wednesday's show. And again, I'm working on, hopefully we'll have Ms. Dawes come through and discuss her book on her involvement as a aficionado of heavy metal music, a woman of color who likes heavy metal music. I did want to talk about Republican presidential candidate Romney, that his campaign appears to be in a tailspin. And we hinted at this the last show with the whole fiasco about the Libyan unrest, but there seems to be even more evidence that Romney's in trouble. And then there's Bloomberg's, of course, Mayor Michael Bloomberg of NYC, his soft drink ban on 16-ounce drinks. And I playfully liken it to stop and frisk. I approve of both. I know the captain may differ on me on this, but I approve of the ban on the supersized drinks. And just as we can't compel people to be healthy, we have to force them. It's kind of hot in the hood, and we might have to have martial law to kind of elicit change. There's a connection between Bloomberg's soft drink ban and stop and frisk. I'm just saying. Anyway, Captain, we'll pick this up on Wednesday. Folks, it's been an absolute pleasure. Check out Yafan. Go to Kickstarter.com. Please contribute to this young lady's campaign. It's an important film. And Wednesday, we'll do it again. Captain, time to get on up. This is Bright Lights, Bigger City, CeeLo. See you on Wednesday.